presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So happy this morning, and many of you were on the air with us yesterday during our R.S. Andrews cooldown, our video comment section after the regular show, when we found out live in the moment that the field at Sanford Stadium is going to be named in honor of legendary former coach Vince Dooley. A dedication taking place, the home opener against Murray State, and this is just great news. It's something here on our program that we made a pretty strong push for a couple of months ago, and now that it has happened, we are just thrilled about this. And this morning, I had the great pleasure of spending some time on the phone with a lot of former Georgia players, guys from that Dooley era, and as you might imagine, they are just as thrilled about all of this as all of us are. I just was loving a chance to hear from what some of those guys were having to say, and I thought it was kind of a way of kicking off our program today. It might be nice to kind of take a look at what some of the guys who played for Dooley think about the fact that the stadium field is now going to be named for Coach Dooley. I think you're going to really like this. Let me start with our buddy, the great former Georgia running back, Tim Worley. Worley, who had a chance to speak to this morning, here was his quote about the field being named for Dooley. He says, first, I want to congratulate Coach Dooley. It's been a long time coming. And Coach Dooley definitely blazed the trail to elevate Georgia football to the elite program it is today. He's a great man of integrity, a great coach, and he made great sacrifices over his 25 years as coach and athletic director to make sure that UGA had the highest level of competitive athletes and quality people. He led UGA to a national championship, and Dooley is the only name, and I love this from Worley. He says, Dooley is the only name for the field between the hedges. I'm honored to call him my coach, Go Dogs. That is former Georgia running back Tim Worley. I also had a chance to talk to the former All-American tight end from UGA, Troy Sadowski. You may know Troy. You see him from time to time in our comment section. He was a great former player for Georgia. He knows Dooley well, and he was also thrilled about this, too. Troy Sadowski letting me know this morning, what an honor for a legendary coach, Sadowski says. Vince Dooley dedicated most of his life to building the University of Georgia into a highly respected national program. Dooley Field at Sanford Stadium, this is something that's been way overdue. He's a great coach and great friend. Congratulations. So it's great to hear Troy Sadowski saying those things and great to hear Tim Worley saying those things. Also had a chance to talk to Buck Ballou, who many of you will remember. Buck was the quarterback for the national championship team back in 1980. Buck's also got, to this day still, much like all these former players do, still a great relationship with Coach Dooley, great mutual respect there. And Buck was also really happy this morning, too. Buck says, it's a well-deserved and overdue honor. He made such a monumental impact at UGA, a strong, focused leader who influenced thousands of student-athletes. I'm thankful to have been part of his tenure and have great respect for him. Once again, that's Buck Ballou. These are guys that played for Coach Dooley. Happy today to find out that field is going to be named for him, Dooley Field at Sanford Stadium. And one of the themes that you hear in a lot of what these guys have to say, Troy Sadowski and Tim Worley and Buck Ballou, they reference the fact that he wasn't just a coach at Georgia. He was athletic director as well. And so when you think about the fact that this field is now going to have Dooley's name, I think you think about those kinds of things as much as you think about the on-field success, because I think it would be incorrect to say Vince Dooley won a national championship, therefore he is going to have the field named after him at Sanford Stadium. That is his most significant accomplishment at Georgia, head coach for a consensus national champion. That'll be the top line of your resume. That's his most significant accomplishment at UGA. But in and of itself, that is not the reason that Dooley is going to have the field named after him at Sanford Stadium. This is really about a 40-year track record, kind of overlapping period of time as both coach and athletic director, and a period of time before that when he was just coach, and a period of time at the end of his career when he was just athletic director. This is about that overlapping period of time. And in terms of all the ways that Dooley could be honored, naming this field after him actually has an extra level of poignance, I believe, an extra level of significance. And a guy who's really a historian of Georgia football, our buddy Chip Towers from DogNation.com, when this conversation first heated up a couple of months ago, he was on our program. And I actually think Chip probably did about the best job of anybody of explaining why Dooley Field makes more sense than almost any kind of honor that Dooley could have gotten. Chip gives us a lot to think about why this particular honor in and of itself is pretty significant. Let me remind you what Chip had to say on this program a couple of months ago.
When Vince Dooley showed up in December of 1963, Sanford Stadium set 35,000 people. In fact, that first season in 1964, they added 7,500 or so temporary seats in what is now the East End Zone to bring it to like 43,000 for the first game in 1964. As we all know, Sanford Stadium now seats 93,000, and most of that is because of Vince Dooley, either because of Georgia winning six SEC championships, certainly winning the 1980 national championship indirectly led to the enclosure of the east end of the stadium in 1981, which really brought it up to, I think at the time, was 82,000 seats. And the bottom line is, I definitely think at the very least, it should be duly filled at Sanford Stadium.
So I think it's kind of hard to imagine what Chip is describing, because if you're kind of like my age, because I kind of came along after a lot of these improvements to Sanford Stadium took place, I was still pretty young when they, you know, kind of closed in that West End Zone for the first time and put that row of seats to go 85,000 on campus stadium. I was still pretty young when they did that. Georgia football has been really big as an entity, been very large my entire life. And for those of you who are even younger than me, you've kind of only been around in an era when Georgia football, the entity, the program itself, the athletic association, has seemed like this really giant, big, you know, business from a sports standpoint. There's nothing in the state of Georgia any bigger than Georgia football, and that's kind of the only reality you've known. And for the most part, even though I'm a little older than some of you, that is also kind of the only reality I've known as well. But Chip Towers says, listen, if you want to go back to the time of the 1960s, Georgia football wasn't anywhere near as big as it is today. I guess, and, you know, the people who are older than me that can probably tell this story better than I can, I'm not even sure it was the biggest program in its own state. Back in the Bobby Dodd era, 1950s, whatnot, you can make a case that Georgia Tech football may have been bigger than Georgia football back then. And that's part of what made Dooley great is that he did build up, and still contributes to this legacy even today, but he did build up Georgia football into this really big, massive behemoth. After all, back then, the state of Georgia, not just the University of Georgia, but the state of Georgia, wasn't nearly as big then as it's become now. You know, Atlanta, compared to Chattanooga, Birmingham, Jacksonville, some of these other mid-sized southern cities, it wasn't the gigantic metropolis that it is now. So Georgia had some work to do to build up its program, and that's exactly what Vince Dooley did over the course of his career there. And that's one of the reasons why he's going to get so much credit for the fact that when you go to Sanford Stadium now, it's a state-of-the-art facility. It seats more than 90,000. It's one of the, I think, the crown jewels of on-campus venues and all of college football, certainly the SEC. And I think that Vince Dooley gets a lot of credit for that. Now, the other big theme that you heard in some of the quotes that I read to you from former players a moment ago, Buck Ballew and Troy Sadowski and Tim Worley, all these really good ex-players who have a lot of love for their alma mater and a lot of respect for Coach Dooley. The one thing that you keep hearing a lot is, oh, well, this is an honor that's long overdue. This is something that, and I'm paraphrasing, that should have maybe happened before now. And that's clearly, if you watch our comment section here on the live video, or if you read my Twitter mentions at Dog Nation Daily on Twitter, or if you see the comments when I post the show at theworldfamousdognation.com, that is a sentiment that's going to come up with fans as well. It's good that this is happening, but maybe it should have happened before now. And I guess the only thing I'd say is, I'm going to choose not to worry about when it should have happened and why it's only now happening in 2019. I'm going to choose not to worry about that. We talked on D&90 yesterday about some of the political intrigue behind the scenes that may have led to this, and that's kind of fascinating to me from a soap opera standpoint. But in terms of what really matters to me, it's not how it happened or how long it took to happen. It's just a sense of gratitude that it did happen. Dooley is a gigantic figure in the history of not just Georgia football, but Georgia athletics. And seeing him named, his name, on the field there at Sanford Stadium, this is a pretty cool treat for UGA fans. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Kroger, and we are glad to have you with us live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and available as a podcast wherever you find them, Apple, Google, TheWorldFamousDogNation.com, everything in between. As I said, our friends at Kroger make it all possible. And today kicks off a really fun time of savings there at Kroger for a day that many of you really, really enjoy. I'm talking about Cinco de Mayo. Kroger's got you covered for whatever celebration you might have be having. You can start today saving on tortillas, sour cream, shrimp, everything you want to do to kind of make those quesadillas, those tacos, everything you're doing for your Cinco de Mayo party. You can start redeeming those coupons today to start saving for the next 3 days at your local Atlanta Kroger. I hope you will check that out. Let me also say that the next time we speak here on Dog Nation Daily on Monday, I am thrilled to let you know that I'm going to be making a major announcement about some big events that Dog Nation's really lucky to be a part of this summer. So if you're thinking about what are my summer plans going to be and what am I going to be doing, well, Monday is a day to be close to Dog Nation Daily, because if you are a UGA fan and if you like having fun in the summer, which is pretty much all of us, let's face it, there are some things this summer around Dog Nation that you are not going to want to miss. I am sworn to secrecy right now. The I's are not dotted. The T's are not crossed. There's still some kind of behind-the-scenes maneuverings that have got to be kind of put in place. But on Monday, I've been told I will be given the green line to tell you about some of the most fun things that we've done here around Dog Nation. That is coming up, and I cannot wait for that. We'll get Jeff Sintel coming up on our program in just a couple of minutes. We'll talk a lot of UGA recruiting with Jeff. Jeff's also another one of these guys that has studied the history of Georgia football for a long time. I'm going to give him a chance to weigh in on the news that we heard yesterday about the field at Sanford Stadium being renamed, or I should say being named, in honor of Vince Dooley. It's going to be good to hear from Jeff on that. And later on our program, Diamond Dogs get ready to host a big series this weekend at Foley Field against Florida. SEC Network Plus is the TV home for that tonight. The guy that's calling that for the SEC Network Plus is our buddy Matt Stewart. He'll be back with us on the program a little later on today, too. So we're busy today on Dog Nation Daily. Before any of that, though, let me go around the doghouse here today, brought to you by our friends at Merriweather and Tharp. And I want to talk about Kirby Smart just for a moment. And I'm going to elevate a conversation. And I'm not going to tell you that the person who wrote all this is the end-all, be-all, and the number one arbitrator of who the best coaches are in college football. But I present this because it's one snapshot of what one national website thinks. And very likely you don't care what they think, but I do think it's kind of interesting to watch the way that Kirby Smart has grown in stature as a coach going now into his fourth season at UGA. I mean, we have lived through it. We have seen it take place, but it's amazing just how quickly Kirby Smart has climbed the ladder of now being perceived as on the shortest of short lists of very best coaches in college football. So let me give you an example of this. There's a guy named Ben Kercheval who writes for CBSSports.com. The last couple of years, he's been doing what he calls his coaching tiers. Kind of, let's group some coaches in this category, some coaches in this category. Let's see kind of who's at the very top, who might be at the kind of very bottom, who's so insignificant we don't even talk about them at all. And we talked about some of this on Dog Nation Daily yesterday as part of our SEC through. But in particular, the part of Kirby Smart for me, I think, is kind of interesting because of how he's grown here. Now, remember, if you want to go back to 2016, Kirby Smart wasn't on anybody's coaching rankings then. He'd never coached a game before. There was, you know, some doubt of, can a guy who's never been a head coach succeed at a place like Georgia where the pressure is so high? Even myself, and I've joked about this before, many of you have given me grief for this. I even wrote that at DogNation.com when Georgia hired Kirby. I'm not quite so sure this coach who's never coached is the right fit for UGA. But by year two, Georgia's going to the college football playoff, and the rest is kind of history. But last year, even after being in the college football playoff, there was still some wondering of, what does Kirby Smart bring to the table? So let me show you what Ben Kercheval wrote about Kirby Smart a year ago at CBSSports.com. He kind of put him in that second tier of coaches just below the very top. So if you look at where he was in 2018, he was in kind of what they call, I guess, the blue blood tier. This is a really good coach, but not among the short list of very best in the country. He's with guys like James Franklin and Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly's now at UCLA. James Franklin, of course, you know, is at Penn State. He's also with Jimbo Fisher and Lincoln Riley in that category. But when Ben Kercheval from CBSSports.com rewrote that same column for 2019, all of a sudden now he's taken Fisher, who has won a national championship, Lincoln Riley, who was back in the playoff again, and Kirby Smart as well, and he's kind of put them in the 2019 tier of the same category that Nick Saban and Dabo Swinney are in, of the very best coaches in college football. Now, you may look at this and say, why is Kirby Smart ranked behind Lincoln Riley? Didn't Smart beat him head-to-head in the Rose Bowl of 2018? And I guess my point here is not so much to focus on where Kirby Smart's ranked within that group, but I do think it's kind of interesting, one snapshot from one writer, one national website, CBS Sports, that moving into year four, Kirby Smart has already kind of put himself in the category of the very best list of coaches in college football, and that list is a pretty short one. Now, for Kirby Smart, to his credit, he has kind of been somewhat self-deprecating when these kinds of conversations have come up in the past. Is he really among the best coaches in college football alongside the guys who've won the national championships? Well, to hear Kirby Smart say it, sometimes we make too much of this on-field coaching as it is. Here's what Smart has said about that in the past.
I learned a long time ago, when you take a job, you need to have proximity to players, and you need to be able to have better players, because the coaching part can be overrated.
So Kirby Smart says, listen, the coaching part's overrated. It's about having good players. And for a lot of people around the country, they do think that Smart's inclusion in discussions like this may be largely due to recruiting. However, I would caution you to say that that's not quite as simplistic as some people want to make it. After all, another one of those guys in that group, Smart has beaten head-to-head. He did beat, you know, Lincoln Riley. And some halftime adjustments in that game may have been one of the big reasons why that happened. So as you move into year four here, you move into a world in which Kirby Smart does not have too much farther to climb to be considered among the very best coaches in the entire sport. And obviously, Georgia fans look forward to seeing him punctuate that statement even more with the on-field performance this season. It's Around the Doghouse here on Dog Nation Daily. It's brought to you by Merriweather and Tharp. And let's face it, most people would rather talk about anything other than the D word. You know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about divorce. But sometimes that becomes a reality that you can't ignore. And as Benjamin Franklin once said, failing to prepare means preparing to fail. Well, Merriweather and Tharp understands all of that. They know the importance of preparation, especially when it comes to facing a divorce. You got to act quickly. You got to gather, analyze all the information, and then you got to get the best possible outcome. That's what Merriweather and Tharp gives you a chance to do. So listen, if you are facing a divorce, you need to give them a call for a free telephone consultation, talk to their attorneys, or simply go to this website. It is theatlantadivorceteam.com. That's theatlantadivorceteam.com. Divorce comes with a lot of uncertainties, but Merriweather and Tharp can help you kind of make sense of it all and get an outcome that's satisfying to you and your family. So please check out theatlantadivorceteam.com. All right, it is Matt Stewart later on. We'll talk some Diamond Dogs with him. We'll also preview another busy weekend for UGA Athletics there. There was a little trolling on the hands of Florida fans against UGA yesterday. We'll recap some of that, but for now, on Friday, that means talking some recruiting, and that means our buddy Jeff Sintel. Great to have him and you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
I want to say hello to Jeff Sintel here on this Friday. Great stuff from him at DogNation.com over the last couple of days, and a lot of recruiting stuff that I want to talk about with Mr. Sintel. But, Jeff, before we get to that, I did talk off the top of the program about the big news yesterday, the field at Sanford Stadium named in honor of Vince Dooley. You understand the history of Georgia athletics as well as anybody I know. We heard from some former players off the top of the program what they thought about this. For you yesterday, how did this news find you, and how did you react when you first heard?
I guess, Brandon, hey, good morning, everybody. Hope you're having a good Friday. I guess for me, the immediate word I would say is overdue. I mean, I've grown up in some of my trails as a reporter. I remember covering Virginia for a little bit, and they always had something like yada yada plaza. You know, for instance, they would be like Brandon Adams Plaza at Mike Griffith Field, at Chip Towers Stadium. They would just name up everything. And for me, and with Coach Dooley and what he's meant to Georgia, I mean, I think this Sanford Stadium upgrade menu needed that first before the new locker rooms, the new recruiting lounges, the new jumbotrons or whatever. I think it is an honor that was deserved about 20 times over.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right about that. And a couple of months ago, we kind of dove into this pretty deeply. We made a pretty strong push on here for this to happen. I was appreciative of some of the civic leaders and former players who'd kind of spoken up on behalf of Coach Dooley in this regard. I was glad to see them do what they did. However, Jeff, in the midst of all of this, there was some conversation from some Georgia fans of, let's be careful with the Sanford Stadium name, because the stadium already has a name. The Sanford family, they've shown deep care and concern for UGA, so let's be careful with that, because what you cited a moment ago is there is a way for some universities, when you start hanging names on things like a Christmas tree, all of a sudden the weight of all of that kind of collapses and almost nothing means anything anymore, because everything's got about 15 different names. So I do think it's really interesting that I think the way that Georgia's going to go about doing this is saying, you know, the stadium has its name, that belongs to the Sanford family, the field has its name for all the justifiable reasons that you just said for Coach Dooley, and we're we're going to kind of appreciate both of these things for what they are. We're not going to hyphenate this thing 15 different times to the point where everybody's name just kind of gets lost in the fold. We're going to give the distinction of the field name. We're going to give the distinction of the stadium name. And we're going to appreciate the entire legacy of Georgia Athletics. And so I agree with you that it probably should have happened before now. But now that it is happening, I get the sense that it's going to unfold in the future in kind of the right way. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put a bow on it, Brandon. But for me, here's what Georgia fans can kind of revel in. The stadium is not being named after a corporation who dropped $20 million or even benefactors. It's not just a name, Brandon. These are the names, and you would use the phrase distinction there. To me, Sanford family, so instrumental in the football stadium construction, the university administration, so instrumental in getting Georgia's athletics program into the modern era back in the 20s. Also, you know, big benefactor for football. And then you got Coach Dooley, who elevated every aspect of the Georgia football program, but also the athletics program. These are iconic figures in history, not just names or benefactors or anything like that, or boosters. That said, I think there's only really one remaining glaring signature honor left. And that would be for that gentleman from Wrightsville, Georgia, Herschel Walker. Brandon, I don't know about you, but maybe they can name the end zones after Herschel Walker or something like that at that stadium on that ground. And then I think all those honors would be complete.
Yeah, I think that's probably a really nice thing to think about and a really nice thing to hope for. And now that Dooley has gotten his just due, we know there was some political backstory behind a lot of that. Now that he's gotten his just due, maybe Herschel Walker can get what's coming to him as well. We certainly hope that's the case. Let me transition here and talk a little bit about UGA recruiting. As I said before, we talked about Mekhi Sherman, the five-star linebacker, on Before the Hedges presented by Kroger on Wednesday. I addressed some of the stuff with Sherman over the last couple of days here. But in your piece at DogNation.com, it goes into even more detail on not just where Sherman stands with his recruitment, but kind of who he is as a person. And this is a very interesting young man who has seemingly been pretty deliberate in how he's gone about all of this kind of stuff. He has not shied away from his feelings about Georgia. We obviously know that he has great, great love for the Dogs. He's also strongly considering, I guess, Ohio State here as well. But getting a chance to spend some time with him, and, you know, he goes into a lot of detail with you about, you know, how he feels about humility, for instance. You know, this is a pretty thoughtful young man. I guess what was your overall takeaway from having a chance to spend some time with a player that Georgia fans really, really hope joins up with this 2020 class and really kind of becomes one of the outspoken recruiters for the class? What was your take on having a chance to spend some time with Sherman?
Yeah, so I think this story here was a baseline for how we try to cover recruiting here at Dog Nation, or at least how I do. There are a lot of places in this world, good places, good websites, good people, good beat guys that cover recruiting. But I always say to these guys when I talk to them, I said, yeah, I'm going to write a story about all this stuff about you and how good of a football player you are and where you might go. But I miss my rep if I don't define you as a young man, define you as a person, and not just a 6'3", 235-pound body in this case, who can run a 4.5. And Brandon, when I tweeted something out, I thought to myself, you know, always be true to what you tweet and don't really try to over-sizzle the steak here. But I went through two pieces of that story, besides the humility part, which really hit home with me. The other thing was, there are two things I don't know if I've ever came across in my years of covering high school athletes, college athletics whatsoever, was the one thing where he said, he takes a knee and he prays before the game. He prays for his opponents because he knows not what he's about to do to them. And everybody on that field is there to be successful, to have fun and prosper. The other thing he said, though, which really is another character reveal with this story right here, was how when he watches football games, he doesn't even care about the offense. He roots for the defenses on both sides of the ball to get stops. I mean, he wants to see those havoc plays. And he wants to see the punter come out, and that's when he's happy watching a football game, is seeing those defensive players eat, so to speak. And there's lots of guys that say, I'm a defensive mindset, I like to attack, I'm hungry, I like to hit folks. I don't know if I've ever heard it quite articulated in the way that Mr. Sherman does. And, you know, we had a great wide-ranging conversation. I'll promise you this, that's probably not the last thought-provoking story you'll see on DogNation.com, just regarding the way Mekhi Sherman thinks That's wherever he goes, whether he ends up in Scarlet, whether he ends up in Red. Mekelle Sherman is a different dude in this recruiting class, to say the least.
Well, I mean, I think back to the 2017 class, how influential a guy like Richard LeCount would have been in that, and 2018 had its own version of that. You need class leaders, and obviously, Jeff, I don't make any kind of secret about the fact that I'd love to see Sherman join up for this class, but not just because I think he's a really good player, although if you're watching on video, you see the film, it speaks for itself. I think that in addition to that, this 2020 class for Georgia could use a dose of the vocal leadership that Sherman might be able to provide. That kind of magnet, that anchor that pulls people together, especially when you're talking about a lot of different geographic regions. I think personalities become even more important to a class like that because you're talking about a bond that's not necessarily just, you know, strengthened by the fact that you come from the same place. A lot of these guys will not be coming from the same place. Boy, you could really see Sherman being the kind of guy that could hold this class together and bring extra guys into this class were he to, as they like to say, commit to that G.
Yeah, I remember talking to Eric Gilbert about him recently, sir. And, man, Eric was kind of just like, Rick was just like, man, that is a passionate dude. And he definitely believes in what he says. And you just get that impression, and I'm glad folks got to hear his word on Before the Hedges. We did some stuff with him. We pulled out about 4 minutes of that interview with 4.5 minutes of that interview with Sherman. And he's really big about no false fronts, no fake faces. He's going to talk to you. He's going to say, shoot. He's going to say, come on now. And he's going to say, like, you know, and, hey, this is how I feel. This is what I believe. This young man, really, he doesn't really care for, oh, I'm talking to a reporter. Let me put on my mama's going to like it, grandma's going to like his face. He's sitting there just giving you a 100% Mekelle Sherman.
You kind of did a snapshot of the 2020 class and kind of where things stand with the current state of UGA recruiting not too long ago, and you mentioned the fact that five-star receiver Julian Fleming is set to take a UGA visit coming up. This is kind of on the heels of Georgia losing out on Rakeem Jarrett. Jarrett commits to LSU. Fleming, I don't know, would be considered a favorite to come to UGA right now, although I guess it's not a bad thing that he's at least stopping by to see UGA. Kind of where do things stand right now for the wide receiver position for the class of 2020? How much of that is a priority for Georgia right now, recruiting those receivers? And, you know, who might be thought of as, you know, joining in with Justin Robinson as part of this class?
Yeah, I think Georgia would probably take Julian Fleming should he decide to look past some very strong feelings for Penn State, Ohio State, and even Clemson. Going to get me used to hearing that a lot, folks. But I think Marcus Roseme, a guy out of South St. Thomas Aquinas in Florida, that's another guy that I think is very high on Georgia's radar. And then there's also Malik Carr up there in Oak Park, Michigan, who's more of, I guess, a tight end hybrid type guy. But, you know, we got to make sure that if we're doing our due diligence with our readership and our viewership here, Brandon, that when we think about receiver for Georgia, you don't just think about those guys with the WR beside their name. I think Eric Gilbert, the aforementioned standout from Marietta High School, he's going to be as an effective and as a matchup nightmare for a defensive coordinator as any pass catcher Georgia will sign. Same thing goes for Darnell Washington in maybe a different light. Those two guys, to me, when you're taking two tight ends like that, I don't think this class potentially, if you take two tight ends like that, or the gentleman, Mr. Johnson from Canada, I don't think you need to take three wide receivers in this class, especially when Georgia needs to load up in other areas on the offensive line, at running back, maybe get a scholarship kicker and just go around, maybe just get three defensive backs, two corners, one safety, four defensive linemen, maybe just three backers, one outside linebacker, two inside backers. I don't think you need to go heavy on receiver. Now, Fleming would be a tantalizing name, of course, because, man, he can play, Red, and he's about 6'3", 215. He caught 22 passes for a state championship program that has won its last 32 games. But here's what I really like about Fleming is he played both ways on the championship team. He picked off four passes, and he turned three of those four interceptions into pick sixes. That, to me, the overall impact on a football game, both sides of the ball, even not their natural position or preferred position, that's just a bona fide, tremendous football player in Julian Fleming.
So what happens if either Dominic Blaylock or George Pickens don't, like, really pop as freshmen? Could the prioritization of a elite receiver of the class of 2020 change at that point?
Well, first of all, if neither one of those two guys pop, then Matt Landers, D-Rob, and J.J. Holloman better go New Year's Day, New Year's Eve explosions all across SEC defenses, because I don't know, when I think about a working model for what the successful 2019 Georgia season looks like, I think about 20 to 35 catches need to come from Pickens and Blaylock at least, and maybe even 5 or 6 or 7 touchdowns from those two guys. So I think that's going to be a consideration about what happens then, unless like a Matt Landers or, you know, Tyler Simmons, please don't forget that name. I know everybody focuses on D-Rob and Landers as the guys that are really going to take people's breath away potentially for Georgia out of the new receiver core. Got to remember Tyler Simmons as well. If you look at what they've done so far at Georgia, maybe Holloman and maybe Simmons have the best film and best resumes so far. But answering your point, I think they like Justin Robinson a whole lot, as much as any wide receiver in the country. And maybe that might mean 2 wide receivers. Maybe that goes to 3. Maybe they take somebody else, one less person at another position. But I do think Justin Robinson, if Georgia had their pick of all the receivers in the class to sign, I do know that Justin Robinson would be in that group.
Let me squeeze in one final thing before we let you go, Jeff. I want to be on the record of saying this right now. I am not the least bit concerned about the fact that if you check the 24/7 sports composite ranking right now, Georgia Tech has a higher rated recruiting class than Georgia. This is not a big deal to me at all. I saw where you did include this as a blurb in one of your recent pieces at DogNation.com. If anything, I think it's kind of funny. I think that Jeff Collins may end up being a problem for some recruiters in the South. As it stands right now, I don't think that Georgia's one of those. Listen, when it's all said and done, we know that Georgia's going to be fine with its recruiting class, and I would expect that Tech does not finish in the top 25. That's my best guess on all of this. But I will notice that Collins has certainly done a pretty good job when it comes to recruiting, but Tech fans should know that he is not a threat to Georgia yet, and they are not knocking on the doorstep of the Dogs yet. I just wanted to make sure you knew. I wanted to be on the record as having said that.
Well, this is going to be a B.A. Stradamus moment for you, because I don't know whether it's the natural order of things, but I think Tech only held that lead over Georgia for maybe hours, or maybe the span of about 36 hours on those composite ratings, my man, because I don't know whether it was the planets shifting back in line with the full moon or whatever, but Tech has realigned itself, and a lot of those 3 stars, all of those 3 stars in that class except for 1 4-star, have gotten a little bit of a downgrade in recruiting ratings marginally. Georgia's gotten a little bit of upgrade in recruiting ratings marginally. Georgia's now 10. Georgia Tech is now 11. The one thing I'll pull out of your statement that I'll probably will disagree with is Jeff Collins, my man, can recruit. He knows what's going on. I think he's going to have Tech as a perennial top 15 recruiting class going forward, especially with the city of Atlanta, especially with that degree in academics. Lots of young men want to be engineers these days. And especially maybe not the Georgia kid, but there's going to be a lot of times where I don't think Jeff Collins and all that buzz off the flat is going to affect Georgia. They're still not going after the same players. Going to affect Auburn, Kentucky, Florida, Florida State, South Carolina, North Carolina. Those are the guys that I think Georgia Tech will take players from. And you can go ahead and include Tennessee and Florida in that mix as well.
Yeah, I think that's an important point. Some of those border rivals, they're going to have a little bit of trouble here. Jeff, it's good stuff. We know you got some great things planned at DogNation.com over the course of the weekend. We'll look forward to reading that. Thanks so much for bringing with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. We'll look forward to catching up with you back on our program again very soon, too.
All right, guys, have a great weekend. It was another great day to be on Dog Nation.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, I mean, as I said to Jeff, I don't take Tech seriously as a recruiting power. I don't think they're going to have a top 25 class this year. I'm going to stand by that and say that. However, what I don't want to happen is, and we'll talk more about Florida in just a moment, I don't want Dan Mullen to do so badly at Florida that the Gators say, we got to get a better recruiter. We used to have Jeff Kahn's defensive coordinator. Let's go steal him from Georgia Tech, because if Florida wanted to, they'd do it in 5 seconds. Let's go steal him from Georgia Tech, and let's put Jeff Collins at Florida as head coach. That's the kind of thing where I'd have to say, all right, well, finally, Florida's going to try to get back in the business of recruiting here a little bit, because when you've got something to sell, SEC program, a program that's had some success, at that point in time, Collins could be a little more dangerous. Collins at Georgia Tech is essentially like a noisy fly ball. It still counts as an out, even if it's, hit 325 feet. That's kind of, what I think Collins is going to be at Georgia Tech. But as Jeff said, and one of the schools he mentioned in particular, I think that Collins at Tech is a big problem for Will Muschamp, because Muschamp's another one of these guys that's trying to recruit the city of Atlanta. You know, right now there is a long line of people trying to recruit that. And for the most part, it's not Georgia. For the most part, Georgia is content to recruit Las Vegas and Baltimore and Washington, D.C. and places like that. Georgia's not really in line in Atlanta as much right now as you might think. But Tennessee is, and Clemson is, and South Carolina wants to be, and Georgia Tech, by virtue of where it's located, is trying to be. Auburn's obviously still going to be there. There's not room for everybody to have a top 15 class. There's just not. And so somebody that wants one's not going to get one. And when it comes to what Collins is going to do at Tech, I don't know if he can build his own top 15 class, but he can certainly keep somebody else from getting one. So that may be worth watching. Before we get Matt Stewart here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger, and look ahead to a big series of the Diamond Dogs, let me also roll through a couple of SEC stories. I'm going to try to do these really quick. So yesterday, Florida fans thought it'd be really cute and really funny and fun to tweet the fact that I guess yesterday was 14,000 days since Georgia had won a national championship. Now, for the life of me, I don't understand this whatsoever. I don't get this at all. Because while it has been 1980 since Georgia has won a national championship, and Georgia admittedly has to deal with that and has to admit that's a record it's trying to correct, it's not like Florida won the national championship last year. 2008 was their last time. So it's almost like you picture Gators fans kind of sitting around in a circle saying, hey, remember how good we used to be 11 years ago? Like, how does that give you any kind of sway in any kind of argument whatsoever? And to, like, poke at Georgia for this right now is essentially taking credit not for what Florida has done, because Florida hasn't prevented Georgia from winning a national championship. It's been Alabama that's done that the last couple of years. So how are Gators fans going to once again sit around and high-five each other for something that Alabama has done? If Alabama wants to mock Georgia for not winning a national championship, my advice to UGA fans, sit there and take it until you can do something about it. But for Florida fans, Florida has no room to discuss this whatsoever. They've got no ground to stand on. They've been losing head-to-head the last couple of years to the Dogs. What this really reminds me of is, remember before 2004, how all the Yankees fans used to always get in the Red Sox fans' face and do the 1918 chant because it had been that long since the Red Sox won a World Series? That's what people are doing to Georgia right now, but how quickly things change in baseball for the Sox and how quickly it might also change for Georgia as well, we'll just have to wait and find out. A story that we did talk about the other day, and we kind of did this on a funny angle. I guess in retrospect, maybe it's not quite as funny as initially seemed. Jalen Jones, the four-star signee from Florida who put his name in the grad transfer portal, there are reports coming out of Florida that he's been accused of sexual battery. Now, maybe that has something to do with why Jones is deciding to leave the University of Florida. We initially kind of used that whole story as mocking Dan Mullen for some of his previous comments. It turns out maybe that was a little more serious than it initially seemed at first. I saw where ESPN, they had like three bylines on this, like, which means three writers. Alex Scarborough and Mark Schlabaugh and Chris Lowe, who I really like, all kind of going in together to tell the legend of Nick Saban and his recovery from hip surgery. I am so sick and tired of all this kind of stuff. I thought George Schroeder, when he was on Dog Nation Daily the other day, nailed this. Saban, I think, is very concerned about perception of him as being old coming off this surgery. And once again, ESPN is willing to trade access to Alabama for favorable coverage of Saban. And I say that as someone who likes all of the writers who wrote this story. But, you know, this idea that somehow Saban is back at work like nothing ever happened 2 days after hip surgery, that strains the imagination. One more quick story I'll give you here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. DJ Uiagalelei, the five-star quarterback we've talked about before, at one point in time, maybe had a little Georgia interest, difficult to tell how much. He is set to decide, I guess, this weekend. It looks like he's going to choose between Clemson and Oregon, and I guess you probably know who's probably considered the favorite there. We'll make that your SEC through. Speaking of the Florida Gators, it is a big series for the Diamond Dogs in Foley Field this weekend. as they get ready to take on their nemesis. Not quite as good as they have been in years past, but still important for UGA. The guy who's going to call the game tonight on SEC Network Plus is our buddy Matt Stewart. Good enough to be back here with us again today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. Matt, we appreciate your time, and thank you so much for being with us.
Absolutely.
So I guess let me start with what the big news is from a Georgia standpoint. It sounds like, based on some of the things that Scott Strickland said this week, that much like last week, Georgia had to start a series against Mississippi State without Emerson Hancock. Looks like that's the same situation for the Dogs tonight. And, Matt, that's obviously a huge loss, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. You're talking about a player who just may be the number one pick in the 2020 MLB draft. So how do you replace that? You don't. Tony Losi will slide into that spot tonight. And Losey's really good, and Losey's a guy I think is going to be taken high in the draft this year, but he's not Emerson Hancock. Is he adequate to get the job done? I think absolutely. But what happens is, it's kind of like I draw the analogy of when you look back at Super Bowl winners, what's the one thing that they have in common? And one of the things that most Super Bowl champions have in common is they have continuity and no injuries on their offensive line.
Yeah.
And I kind of draw that analogy with starting pitching in baseball, and especially college baseball, in your weekend rotation. And it isn't as simple as saying, oh, well, one guy's down, we'll just slide everybody around. Now you're messing with the continuity and the chemistry of everything that has worked for you throughout the course of the season. So does Georgia have the arms not to totally replace Emerson Hancock? So, like I said, you know, I've already told you what his prospects are, but do they have the arms to survive it? Yes, but can you overcome that shakeup in your chemistry and what's been working for you all year? And I think that's the big question for this Georgia team. If they can get Emerson Hancock back after this weekend, they're okay. I think they are in danger here of maybe slipping out of a top eight national seed. If they somehow would drop this series, even without Emerson, I expect Georgia should win this series. With Emerson, I think they would sweep the series. They certainly should still win the series.
Yeah, so let me talk to you about that a little bit, and I want to do this from the perspective of some of our audience who may not follow college baseball quite as closely. First of all, I'd love to hear you explain the importance of being a top eight national seed, what that means for the postseason, and I guess kind of where Georgia kind of lands here playing Florida, having been swept by Mississippi State. This is a program that's kind of dropped a bit in the national rankings, and as you said, maybe the perception's also slipping to the point that it may not get a chance to host some of these crucial postseason series. So give us a reminder of why being a top eight seed so important, and kind of from a resume standpoint, what has happened to Georgia to really put such extra emphasis on these Florida games.
Yeah, well, I think Georgia's still in the conversation. So they haven't dropped out of that conversation. A loss certainly here. In any one of these final three weekends, especially the ones they have at home against Florida and Alabama to close things out, would hurt those chances, because Georgia should win these series. In fact, should sweep those series, as odd as that sounds to say when you're playing the Gators, because
sure,
we know their incredible history over the last decade in particular. And then they're on the road at Auburn next week. If not win that series, at least win a game in that series. But the importance of it is playing at home. I mean, it's that simple. Georgia's 22-3 at home. No team in the SEC has fewer home losses than Georgia. They have basically the best record, the best home record in the SEC. And so being a top eight national seed guarantees that you're home not only for the NCAA regionals, which you are if you're top 16, but if you're top eight, that means if you do advance to a super, you're playing that series at home. And for example, Georgia took 2 of 3 from LSU at home. They won 2 of 3 from Vanderbilt at home. And these are teams that are top 10, Vandy's top 5. And they swept Missouri, another team that, you know, depending upon what their NCAA situation is, they're going to be in an NCAA regional. Certainly they have a team that qualifies for it. Georgia at home, it's huge. Not at home, Georgia's still good at home. No team has had more road wins, I should say, than Georgia in the SEC. They have 11 road wins. So they've been good on the road. They've been good at home. But they're better at home, as are most teams. And so that's why it's important to be a top eight national seed.
Before we let you go, let me turn to the other side for a moment. You mentioned Florida, nowhere near as good as it has been in recent years. What has been the cause of that for the Gators this year?
Pitching just hasn't been. I mean, you can only
even a team like Florida, you can only keep graduating or drafting out, you know, first, second, third round draft pick so long before it does have an impact, before it does catch up with you. And one guy they were counting on, Dyson, the junior, and, you know, he's been on the shelf and he hasn't lived up to expectations. And quite frankly, they're dead last in the SEC in pitching. And we're talking about a program that we're accustomed to them being not just number one in the SEC in pitching, but number one in the nation in pitching with first round arms. And that's their problem. Offensively, they're better than Georgia, really. Statistically, you look at it, they're a much better offensive team than Georgia, and that's what they'll be hanging their hopes on this weekend, is that they can out-hit Georgia with McConnell and Maldonado and Langworthy and Bray Smith. Those guys can really hit the ball, and that's what they'll be counting on this weekend, that maybe they can out-slug Georgia, especially if Georgia, you know, experiences some issues in their starting rotation because of the chemistry issues. Again, the guys that Georgia are going to roll out there this weekend, top flight arms, but they're playing and pitching in different spots than they've been accustomed to pitching in during the regular season, and so that's a concern.
So the SEC Network Plus, the place to go tonight and tomorrow for Diamond Dogs against Florida. I guess the Watch ESPN app may be the easiest way to access that. Matt, how else can folks find that if they want to see the game the next couple days?
Oh, well, I mean, far be it from me to promote anything that Xfinity does these days. But, hey, they, you know, I watch SEC Network Plus, ACC Network Extra, anything ESPN3. I sit there watching on my TV. So if you have Xfinity, if you have Comcast, you can watch it on your TV just like any other channel, which is, you know, typically what I do. But or you can watch it on the ESPN app as well. But, yeah, they've made it very convenient, thankfully, for that. Both those games, tonight, 7 o'clock, tomorrow, 2 o'clock, will be on SEC Network Plus. And then the Sunday game is ESPN2.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. Matt, thanks so much for being with us here on Dog Nation Daily. We always love your call, the Diamond Dogs, and looking forward to seeing, hopefully, a big crowd at Foley Field for the weekend. And it's always fun to see Georgia against Florida. So we appreciate you helping us get ready for it.
Yeah, they're sold out again, so it'll be fun.
Good stuff. That's Matt Stewart there. See him tonight on the SEC Network Plus, Georgia versus Florida. In fact, it's part of a big weekend for UGA Athletics. Let's roll right into that here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger, as a part of our Kroger kickoff. You know, on Fridays here in our program, we like to kick off the weekend. Many of you got big plans to do fun things. And, well, for UGA Athletics, there's plenty of big plans as well. In fact, let's take a look at some of that right now. As we said, Georgia starts its baseball series against Florida this weekend. That begins tonight, SEC Network Plus tonight and tomorrow. And as Matt said, it's ESPN2 for that on Sunday. So if you can't be in Athens for the game, you can tune into one of the big networks to see the Diamond Dogs in Florida on Sunday. And y'all know how I feel. Georgia versus Florida in any sport, that's a pretty fun opportunity to watch the Dogs get that win. And Georgia, as Matt Stewart just explained, really needs that one as well. Softball team hosting Ole Miss. Ole Miss is a top 25 team, so this is a pretty big one for the softball team. That also starts today, and those, I believe, are in Athens as well. And then on Monday, the women's golf is in the NCAA regional, so we're getting to that kind of postseason time for a lot of these spring sports, and we'll keep our eye on that for all of them and for all the UGA athletics teams taking place in action this weekend. We wish you the best of luck. We know that you're going to do the UGA community proud. Now, speaking of our friends at Kroger, one of my favorite things about Kroger is the fact that that's where I go to get my real dairy milk from Georgia cows. I love that, but my kids love it even more than I do. When I tell you that for every meal and kind of everything in between, they drink that all the time. We go through gallons of this stuff, a couple gallons a week, it seems like. And I love to see my kids drinking it because I believe that it's really good for them. It's good for their teeth. It's good for their bones. It's kind of good for everything else in between. It's just a refreshing beverage all the way around. And I also like all the things that my wife cooks for us that also include this. Really good macaroni and cheese, for instance. Milk is a big-time part of that. This time of year, I like to sit on the back deck, maybe get a little bit of a milkshake, a little bit of ice cream. That's the real dairy milk used as that as well. It's not just an ingredient in the stuff that you cook. It's something that you drink. It's just a really important part of the table for every time my family gets together for a meal. And the place we go to get our real dairy milk, the real stuff that's good for you, is right there at Kroger. We appreciate their support of local Georgia agriculture, and those Georgia cows producing that dairy milk is a lot of fun for me. All right, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger, let's get ready to wrap up one of the things that Matt Stewart said a moment ago is with Emerson Hancock not pitching, you know, moved Losey into that Friday night spot. You know, one of the things that Georgia has been really good at this year is they've had some incredible clutch performances on Sunday games. Think about having against LSU. Think about having against South Carolina, for instance. You know, these big Sunday performances where Losey had to also go out and pitch you a gem. You know, a lot of times Hancock's out in the attention this year, but it's been really Losey on the Sunday who's given Georgia a big effort in a lot of cases that's led to wins. With him going on Friday, you don't have that on Sunday anymore. So that's something to think about, something to pay close attention to as Georgia tries to go out a little shorthanded against Florida this weekend. By the way, speaking of football, as we said before, the number that matters around here, 916 days. That's how long it's been since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten Georgia. We love watching that number go up. It's our Gator Hitter Updater. Y'all have a great weekend. We'll see you back here Monday, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.